Coming up in this week's programme, we have got news about the banning of lunchboxes in British schools and could it happen here. We'll also be looking at upcoming events for the month of June, seven things you should know about going gluten-free. Our book review this week is Death by Food Pyramid, and can you put your kids on a paleo diet? Hello and welcome to Low Carb Paleo Show. It's Mark Moxham here and I'm joined in the studio with my co-host Alan Brough. Alan, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you, Mark, and everyone?
I'm wonderful. What's been going on with you this week? Anything interesting?
I've had a very interesting week. For example, I was interviewed by a university student in Austin about GMO issues. And of course, something that was supposed to last 30 minutes turned out into 2 hours discussion. So that was, since it's a subject I feel very passionate about. And also will be the issue in my next book.
Brilliant. Anything that came out of that discussion?
She was concerned mostly about the issue of labeling and the law surrounding it. I helped her understand the issue, and basically my position was before we wait for the lawyers and the Congress to act on this, we should take the matter into our own hands and start buying only non-GMO products, and it will eventually force companies to realize that customers will not abide or will refuse to buy anything that is not labeled properly.
Yeah. I mean, I noticed a few months ago there was Dr. McCullough who was very much promoting the various bills going through different states, introducing, you know, new labeling laws. Or I think it was more effective allowing companies that produced good labels without GMO, or rather who produce products without GMO, to actually label their products as such.
Right. There's actually a battle going on right now where you have a nonprofit organization called Non-GMO Project, which certifies products to be non-GMO and allows the company to affix a label with a little butterfly. You may have seen it around the store. And the majority of the industry is not happy about this. They're trying to stop that and trying to create a nationwide federal law, which would make sense. But the problem is they're going to tone it down so much that basically they're going to give the right for the manufacturer to decide whatever they want to put on the box, on the label, which is not what the customer wants. The customer wants clear labeling, and they want to know exactly whether their product is safe or not for them and their children to eat. So that's, and I fully support clear labeling.
Yeah, me too.
Personally.
Well, yeah. As you know, I mean, I spend a lot of my time in Europe. And there you go around the shops and everything is clearly labeled. In fact, it's almost boasting GMO free.
Right, right.
GMO free. And you can see that people do gravitate towards those. They, for instance, the other day I was in a supermarket and there was a lady going along. She was choosing her eggs and she was turning the packets over. Her husband said to her, what are you doing? They're eggs. And she said, no, she said, I want the ones that are GMO free.
Right, absolutely.
And, you know, and he just looked, oh, yes, well, of course, yes.
Yeah, actually, Whole Foods has done a little study in his own store and noticed that when you have two similar products side by side and one is clearly labeled GMO, non-GMO versus the other one not labeled, the non-GMO products sell 40% more than the same or similar product right next to it. That's a good example of how the customer want to know. As a matter of fact, 90% of the American people want their products to be labeled clearly for GMO products.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's probably the same for most of us. We like to know what we're eating. If we're poisoning ourselves, that's one thing. But if other people are poisoning us...
Yeah, without our knowledge, yeah. Which is underhanded. What raised my hackles is the fact that the same American company that will sell their products in Europe are forced to label, and they do label their products in Europe, and yet they're still not labeling it in America. So what is wrong with this picture?
Everything, really.
Right.
So if you support GMO labeling, then let us know your views. Something else that could actually have a bearing on that is in the UK, there are talks of banning lunchboxes in British schools. Now, of course, that does mean that children who go to school there will be having to compulsorily eat the food provided by the school, which may or may not be GMO free, for instance.
And actually, there's a few school systems starting to enforce the same rules in America, and it's an outrage. And American moms will not stand for this, because not only you're basically the kids is faced with no choice but to eat the kind of quote unquote food, which I would never call food, but fast food, basically sold by private corporations in the school. Which is typically loaded with all sorts of, you know, genetically engineered and artificial products, but also could cause severe allergies for the kids. So how dare they try to impose or force the kids to eat foods that could make them sick? That's just not acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, on one hand, I can understand that some parents don't act conscientiously or sensibly in the food that they give to their kids. You know, it could be potato chips, it could be sweets, it could be cakes, it could be cans of Coke, all those sorts of things that aren't necessarily good for us. But on the other hand, for those parents that do act responsibly towards their children, giving them good food, I don't see why they should be penalized just because some parents don't.
In this case, as in any case, I suggest that the parents should be given the choice and not outright banned.
Mm.
Because it sounds very big brothery, you know, to just make one side decision and force everyone to follow it.
Mm. Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, the other week, Alan and I had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Terry Walls, and she told us her inspiring story of how she reversed her multiple sclerosis by switching to a paleo-style diet that focuses, as you know, on fresh, raw foods, high in specific nutrients that are needed for proper function of myelin and the mitochondria. Now, although these are high in essential nutrients, particularly vitamins and minerals, Alan was surprised to see that Dr. Walls also recommended in certain cases that people supplement with vitamins and minerals. So he asked her why this was in this sneak peek from the interview, which you're about to hear. She obviously gives us a very straightforward and compelling answer, and you'll be able to hear the rest of that interview in a week or 10 days. So do look out for it on the Low Carb and Paleo Show channel and also on the website. Here's the interview.
I noticed that you also suggest supplementations. What is your position on the chance that some of the supplements might be synthetic or contain genetically engineered ingredients?
Oh, you know, and I think that is something to be concerned about. I think we have to be concerned about the ratios of nutrients, because if you get the ratios out of whack, you create insufficiencies. So strong bias for food and very targeted use of supplements that should be monitored by some sort of lab monitoring, so you don't over replace and get the ratios between your minerals or fats or vitamins out of whack. Many people don't realize that a lot of our supplements are coming out of China, and a lot of them are coming out of genetically modified bacterial vats.
Absolutely, yes. One concept that intrigued me.
One thing I do want to mention this week is coming up June 5th to the 8th, we've got PrimalCon in New York. Now, if I've understood it right, this is the first Primal convention held in New York. And I guess you'll see all of the big names in Primal and Paleo attending. If you want details about it, by the way, you can go to primalblueprint.com and just follow the links for PrimalCon New York. And obviously, we'll put the links to that under the program notes under this program. Now, Alan, what have you? What websites have you been looking at this week that caught your eye?
One website that I like, and actually, to be clear for everybody, I actually contribute to that site as well as a featured writer once in a while. Also, offer some of my recipes, paleo recipes, on that website. It's called Stuffed Pepper. Think of it as a stuffed paper with, you know, like in the south of France, we stuff it with meat and then, you know, bake it in the oven. So it's called Stuffed Pepper. And
so it's a bit like a farce or something like that.
Yes, like a farce, but not a funny one, just a, just a food. One of the things she's talking about this month is seven things you should know about going gluten-free. And her point is that, and I'm not going to go through all seven, but we'll probably give the link.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you follow the link, you'll see that this lady has been allergic to gluten for a long time. And so she went first, she went gluten-free for a couple of years, and fortunately it didn't seem to help very much. So eventually, after, you know, reading a lot of material, she realized that maybe the only way to get out of it and the discomfort she was feeling was to go into paleo. And so she tested paleo and it worked for her. It turns out that up to 92% of people on a traditional gluten-free diet never heal.
Really?
And they heal only when they switch to the paleo diet, because if they're already sensitive to gluten, they might have a cross sensibility to other grains.
Right, yeah.
You know, even though they may be gluten-free, they might not just be allergic to the gluten itself, but allergic to some of the other ingredients contained in the grain itself.
Yeah.
So she's expanding on that, and she's mentioning also that it's sometimes difficult to trust the gluten-free labeling for people highly sensitive, like celiac disease people. 20 parts per million is not safe, which is the current standard. So even if you may be gluten sensitive like I am, and 20 parts per million would be perfectly acceptable, but for someone that's highly sensitive, like a celiac disease, 20 parts per million is actually dangerous for them.
Yeah, yeah.
So these are some of the few points that she talks about, and I highly recommend to take a look at it, and something new to learn about. You know, if you are sensitive to gluten, but you can seem to progress in your healing, that maybe something you can take a look at.
Yeah, something that was brought to my attention this week by Susie Walker, actually, who's a UK paleo person. She mentioned a book called Death by Food Pyramid by Denise Minger. And it's basically goes to show us how shoddy science, sketchy politics, and shady special interests have ruined our health. Now, Denise Minger is based in Portland. She's a health writer and lecturer, and she's actually got quite a reputation for challenging a lot of today's leading voices who are just spouting conventional wisdom. But the thing is about Denise is that she meticulously researches and critiques a lot of the guidelines that are given to us by people who should have our own interests at heart but don't seem to. For instance, she's looked at the USDA guidelines as well as the China study and totally torn them to shreds and shown exactly where they're lacking in providing the right level of nutrients for you and I. Another thing about Denise is that she has become a real poke in the eye to many mainstream nutritionists and other health figures. Denise is the sort of person who really goes to town on many of today's public health figures who are continually promoting the flawed dietary dogmas that we see all around us. And her book is actually a brilliant piece of research. But don't just take my word for it. If you look at many of the reviews that this book is getting, many of them are five star. In fact, the majority of them are five star. Just a quick peek on Amazon shows that she's got over 110 five-star reviews and nothing less than a four-star. Now, while the book seems to be merely being about the food pyramid, it's actually about a whole lot more, in as much as she goes into the whole gambit of shady politics behind the food industry. She also talks about the science, or rather the pseudoscience, that is brought out virtually all the time to fool the unknowing and people who just have no real grasp of the science behind how food works in the body. If you want to know about what's going on in the food industry and how they are using subversive tactics in order to get us to buy low quality, poor nutrition, then this is the book that you want to read. Our main story this week is something that's dear to the heart of Alan, I'm sure. He wants to pose the question, can you put your kids on a paleo diet? Now, as I say, that's not just a question that we would ask, it's also a question that many parents ask. So, Alan, can you put your kids on a paleo diet?
Well, it depends how you're looking at the word diet. There's a couple of different definitions for it. As the typical and the most popular version is the one that people use when they want to go and lose weight, which is not the focus of the paleo diet. The paleo diet is more of a lifestyle change. If you happen to lose weight while eating this kind of food, then so much the better, but it's not the focus. I've been asked a couple of times by people, can you lose weight on a paleo diet? And the answer is yes, if you follow by the rule, but that's not the point of the diet, the same way as the Mediterranean diet is not designed to lose weight or make you healthy. It just happens to be healthy and make you healthy in the process, but the main goal was not to lose weight or anything like this. So if you look at it as a way to lose weight, it's possible you will lose weight. You might also gain weight in the sense that you will lose fat weight and gain muscle weight, which is ideally what you're looking for. But to see it as a diet in order to lose weight is the wrong way to look at it, as far as I'm concerned. I wish that, you know, I'd known about the paleo diet when my kid was young. Not that we fed him bad food, it's just that at the time I was not aware of the implication of food and health, between food and health. And now that, you know, 20 years later, of course, I try to kind of explain my son what's good, what's not so good. Of course, he's too old to listen anymore, but, you know, I keep on trying. Never know, maybe one day he'll actually get it. So to continue on this, do not recommend you put your kids on a paleo diet just to lose weight. But if your whole family decides to go on the paleo lifestyle, then nothing bad can happen. You know, if you consider the tenets of the paleo diet, and I'm going to keep it simple because my paleo diet book expands on that for hundreds of pages. But to keep it tight here, the paleo diet is made of nutrient-dense, good quality proteins, including unprocessed dairy, if your kid is not allergic to it. If they're allergic to it, then just use nut milk, for example. Unless, of course, you're allergic to nuts. So, you know, keep that in mind as well. I personally try to stay away from soy milk, but that's just a personal preference. You can do soy milk. I prefer almond milk. And then you add to that good quality animal protein. So that goes with, you know, beef and pork and all those kind of meats. And when I specify good quality, it's important to know the difference between the typical industrial meat that is usually fed genetically engineered food, or feed actually, also contain antibiotics and growth hormones. So I would stay away from that, and I would try to focus only on either farm-raised or grass-fed beef or animals. Or humanely raised animals, so they are not, you know, completely stressed out. When it comes to fish, I would make the same suggestion: avoid farm fish, which typically is contains artificial colors, is fed genetically engineered grains like soy and corn, and they color the flesh with artificial color to make it look like the real, you know, wild-caught salmon that gets its color from eating krills, you know, naturally. So, because if you've ever seen a farm-raised salmon meat that is not being colored artificially, it would look gray, basically. So you want to stay away from that. Same thing with poultry and eggs. Try to stay with ideally locally raised, farm-raised poultry and eggs. This way, they were more likely, like in the old days, like my grandmother's farm, where the chicken were allowed to roam anywhere, and they could pick on, gravel and pick on worms. That's why I always found it very interesting when I see vegetarian eggs, because naturally the chicken is not a vegetarian.
No.
They will try to get their beaks on the fattest worm they can find, as much as possible. I know it sounds gross to some people, but that's how
That's
it
the way they
is. I
are,
mean,
yeah.
yeah, in real life, that's how it is. So, that said, you can also complement that with raw nuts and seeds. Also, try to stay with raw and not roasted, because the roasting process will damage the oils and turns them into trans fatty acids. And with the diet that also is loaded with fresh fruits and vegetables, there's no need to count calories.
Oh,
All
that's
right.
true. Yeah.
And typically, they can eat all they want until they feel full, because there's no excess calories, because there's little calories in meat and there's zero calories in fresh fruit vegetables. There's some calories in fresh fruit, but as long as you don't exaggerate, there's no issues there. On the other hand, the paleo diet avoids all processed food and fast food, which
Right,
is important. No highly processed fats like vegetable hydrogenated oils, which is also very bad for you. No processed or artificial sweeteners. No soft drinks or added sweetened drinks like processed juice or iced teas. Have you noticed how these bottled iced tea are so sweet,
Oh,
incredibly sweet?
I can't eat them anymore. In fact, there's a lot of sweets, desserts, I suppose I should say, that I just find too sweet to eat anymore.
Absolutely. You will find out on a paleo diet that as you eat cleaner, quote unquote cleaner, your palate will get more and more sensitive to flavors,
Oh, yeah, very much so.
because you're moving away from any excess sweeteners and processed foods with artificial flavorings, and your palate cleans up. And all of a sudden, if you do eat a cake once in a while, or a cookie, then all of a sudden it tastes very, very sweet. Sickening sweet, actually. Another thing to know about paleo is that you should not eat grains, including rice, and no beans and legumes, including peas and lentils. So I know for some people it's difficult, but it's not impossible. There's plenty of books that will lead you and give you plenty of good recipes. One of them is mine, of course. Another thing too, it's important, especially for kids, try to make it fun. Maybe introduce it progressively. You don't even have to say anything. But when it comes to processed food and fast food, you may have to put your foot down. That's going to be the hard part, because you get peer pressure, from friends, from schoolmates, and because the other kids eat it, they don't want to be different, so they want to eat the same food. So my suggestion is to try to educate them or teach them why the paleo diet is good for them and their growing bodies. They do need good quality protein to grow up. They do need good fresh vegetables and fruits to get vitamins and minerals. And then, honestly, it's okay to cheat a little bit. There's no hard and fast rule. A lot of the paleo gurus out there are perfectly fine with the 80-20% rule. So you eat 80% paleo, and 20% you can eat a pizza once in a while, have a cookie once in a while, or a regular birthday cake. It's not as stringent as if you were allergic to a food, for example. Obviously, if your kid is allergic to gluten, for example, you have to be very careful about not eating cupcakes or regular cakes. But on the paleo diet, if your kid is not allergic, then give him some chips once in a while. It's okay. But try to keep the core 80% of it paleo, and then the rest will take care of itself.
So have
fun with it. If you feel like dressing up in your best animal skin outfit, you feel like it, go ahead and play games. Make it fun. I mean, you know, I know some parents that would actually do that. So I'm not that type, but, you know. I've never been able to even dress up during Halloween. So definitely not my style. But those are a few ideas that if you were wondering if paleo diet is good for your kids, it is.
Excellent, excellent news. On to our question of the week. Our question this week is a very simple one, and it's something that's going to be in many teenagers' thoughts, and that is it true that a low-carb or paleo diet can improve acne? Well, the short answer to that is yes, it can. And the reason for that is the way that grains and carbs work on our bodies. Eating a high level of carbs or sugars will increase the amount of inflammatory reactions our body has to those particular foods. Now, as you know, that our skin is one of those organs of the body that produces the most amount of oil. Did you know that?
Yeah. So our skin is actually our biggest quote-unquote organ, and we breathe and expel toxins through it. So it makes sense that if you have an excess of calories of bad quality fats in your system, it will come through the skin.
Now, the thing that I've noticed is that, you know, I'm a 52-year-old guy. I spend most of my time in ketosis following a low-carb diet. It has lots of health advantages, but one of those is that my skin is always a lot better.
Oh, now I understand your baby skin.
Well, thanks. But if I slip off that path, if I go back onto eating anything with high sugar content or lots of carbs, then one of the first things that I notice is that my skin erupts just like a teenager's, which is good in one way, I suppose, because it shows me I'm still fairly young, but not good on another, because they're not the sort of thing that you want.
Yeah, so, compared to me, you're still a kid, so don't worry about it. It's actually interesting you mentioned that, because last weekend, you know, going back to 80-20% rule, actually I splurged a little bit last weekend. I was with friends, and so there was all sorts of foods, including some that were not quite healthy, according to the paleo diet, and guess what? I got a pimple out of that. So I'm not, you know, I'm not a teenager, but it still works like this.
It's quite amazing, really, how many health benefits there are to low-carb and paleo. More people should try it. Okay, a quick shout-out to everyone who's liked our Facebook page this week. Alan's going to start.
And thank you for liking our Facebook page to Yasuhiko Daimaru. Thank you very much. Pierrette Gantois, Patty Moore, Françoise Pointeau. Hello, Françoise. And Nancy Sucre.
And also a big thank you to Bridget in Lovely Podunk, Diana Hardwick-Smith, Vivian Fatima Endonella, and Jackie Chapman. Alan, I know you're always liking to make the lives of people easier. Have you got a tip for this week?
Actually, it depends on which point of view. I am not a gardener, so that tip would not be a good tip for me. I have noticed how in general in America, you have a lot of wasted space, perfectly usable space for lawn. But have you thought of growing your own food and use it as your farm SE, as in F-A-R-M A-C-Y instead of a pharmacy. So basically what I'm saying is, when it makes sense to use fresh, good quality food as a healing medium for your body instead of going to the drugstore and get drugs that, you know, may help you in the short term, but, you know, may not help you in the long term, and it just covers the symptoms and not necessarily heal you. So my suggestion is, if you have the inclination, and some people don't, I'm not one of them, but you should look into growing your own food instead of a lawn. I'm looking around Austin, I'm seeing more and more people turning their lawn, which typically is, one, a lot of work, secondly, demands a lot of water, which is getting more and more sparse in Texas. We've been through a drought for the past 3 years now, and it's not getting any better. It's not as bad as California, but it's... And then out of your hard work, you will get fresher, healthier food full of vitamin and mineral, and not covered with toxic pesticides. As some of you may be aware, or most of you, I hope, most of our fruits and vegetables are covered with pesticides and insecticides, which are not good for us, even if we try to wash it off. It's not a good thing. So I'm seeing a lot more people taking matters literally into their own hands and growing their own food because they just don't trust the food system the way it is now. And so that's my tip of the week.
Excellent. Of course, food grown in your own garden always seems to taste that much better.
Absolutely, because you put your own sweat and blood into it.
Yeah, and not in that, I think, is the fact that it's grown in a garden that's not pushed for production. It's just used, and the soil is used more naturally. You still get an uptake of a lot more vitamins and minerals that you just don't get in much of the commercially produced food.
Right. And actually, for someone that doesn't garden, I actually ordered yesterday. I was curious about it. As this guy in Austin advertising his 4x4 food gardening setup, which is basically, you know, four railroad tires put into a square, and he claims that you can grow literally hundreds of pounds of food for your own family out of that. So I don't really have a backyard, but if I I'm sure if I put my mind to it, I could actually grow something and in the little space I have behind my condo.
And I suppose it's something that of that size, it's not going to be very heavy, so you could probably even put it on a balcony.
Right. Okay, you can maybe instead of make it 4x4, make it 2x6 or 2x8, kind of a lengthwise.
Yeah.
And for those of us that live in apartments, there's also new systems, hydroponic systems, that you can actually put that in your kitchen or in a spare space, and actually, as long as you try to expose it to light, you can actually grow your food through a liquid nutrition.
Yeah.
A medium, which is also, I think, a very good idea.
Yeah, sounds good. So there you have it, a whole host of things covered in this week's program. Hope you enjoyed it. Once again, this is Mark Moxham.
And this is Alan Bro. Thank you for being with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yep, from the Low Carb Paleo Show. Cheerio.